Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 2:30 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is April 6th. I thought we'd kick off with 10-year treasuries. We're certainly seeing an acceleration, and it was up another 5 basis points in here today, up to 2.6%. And last month, or I guess this time last month, we were a lot closer to 1.7%. So we've had a really significant move, and we're coming back up into the upper side of this range that's persisted for most of the last decade. And 3% has been a big psychological level for at least a decade. So it's a logical area where we might anticipate some resistance beginning to come through. And we certainly have an oversold condition for prices. And when we look at the daily chart, we had a big move yesterday. It popped on the upside again in here today. Wasn't quite able to hold it. And the whole reason for it is that the Federal Reserve is talking about potentially removing about $95 billion a month from the size of its balance sheet. So they haven't started yet. But the size of the balance sheet right now is around 8.9 trillion, which would mean that within the space of a year, they would have it back below 8 trillion. And that's a really fast process of balance sheet runoff and quantitative tightening. It's substantially faster than what they did between the middle of 2018 and 19. Back then, it took them almost 18 months to take $700 billion out of circulation. So it's effectively double the pace of quantitative tightening that they did last time round. And that's going to have a meaningful effect on the availability of liquidity for the global markets. And it's aimed squarely at financial conditions. Now, I think it's also particularly relevant to just look at the measures that the Federal Reserve itself looks at. So financial conditions are have tightened somewhat, but not to any great extent relative to the extreme tightness that we had in early 2020. But it also helps to put into context just how sensitive the market is now. We had a really acute tightening of financial conditions in 2007 and 8. And we had some tightness come through in 2020, and that was immediately forestalled by Federal Reserve action in particular. Now, we're still in benign territory. It's still in negative territory, but financial conditions are beginning to tighten, and with the Federal Reserve beginning to move in to raise rates and simultaneously withdraw liquidity, then those financial condition measures are going to tighten further. What was interesting with regard to the Goldman measure of financial conditions is that it had been tightening, then it eased up a bit, and then subsequently has begun to pause again. So this index, it's basically tabulated the same way as that Chicago Fed one, that when it rises, you're getting tighter financial conditions. When it eases, when financial conditions ease, it contracts. What this also helps to highlight is that the rebound that we had in stock markets from the end or the middle of March contributed to looser financial conditions. And what it helps to highlight is that there are a number of factors contribute to how financial conditions are measured. And the first is the stock market is an important one. So the NASDAQ 100 gapped lower in here today. And then it recouped some of the decline intraday, and then began to give it back up again. So we're still getting a little bit of ebb and flow, backing and filling. But in fact, I think it's more appropriate to call it filling and backing, because we still have people that want to buy the dip. They've been conditioned over the course of a decade to buy the dip. But Generally speaking, buying the dip works best when the Fed has your back, and right now they don't. So it's more likely that we're going to see additional downward pressure, and the Nasdaq is back below the 200-day moving average. And we are still almost 3,000 points away from the 1,000-day moving average. The Nasdaq went up much more than the S&P 500 did, so therefore it has a larger or a wider overextension relative to the trend mean to close. It's also, I think, worth highlighting that the Nasdaq peaked in November and the S&P 500 peaked in January. So I think it's also just worth highlighting that from the Fed's perspective, the S&P is perhaps the more relevant index. And the fact that it's only 6% below the all-time peak, that is lending fuel to the argument that financial conditions are too loose and that the Fed has to act. So what they are in fact doing is engineering a decline in asset prices. And that's certainly feeding through into the stock market now. It's a dangerous time to buy the dip because we're only just below the peak. We haven't had any major dip yet. I think an argument for buying the dip was appropriate a month ago when we had a short-term oversold condition. And I think it'll be even more appropriate if the index comes back down towards that 3,500 level, which coincides with the peak from early 2020 and the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But that's nearly 1,000 points below where the price is today. So I think that we're certainly in store for greater volatility. And the VIX index has pretty much unwound all of the advance that it put in January and February, and now it's beginning to demonstrate some support here. And there's been a sequence of higher reaction lows evident for the last 6 months. So there's a very clear rounding characteristic evident on this chart, and the index itself is quite volatile. So I think it's also a relevant time to pay attention to the volatility of volatility. And what we can see here is that on aggregate, since 2020, the volatility of the VIX has been higher than it was that in the period before the pandemic. So we can anticipate that there will be bigger moves and that there'll be more choppy market action overall. Well, with the Federal Reserve talking about taking almost 100 billion out of circulation every month, then that would generally be beneficial for the currency. So the dollar index is pushing up and out of this most recent short-term range and testing the 100 level. This is the upper side of the 6.5 year range. So we're at a really rather important juncture here. I still, however, don't believe that the Federal Reserve is going to relent from talking about raising rates or withdrawing liquidity until we've had a good-sized pullback on the stock market. I think it's also important to highlight that when we look at the mortgage rate, 30-year mortgages are almost at 5%. And this is the highest level seen since 2011. So we've had a really significant move, up 200 basis points in the space of about 6 months. Now, when we think about the fact that the yield or the rate was around 3% and it's now close to 5%, then that's adding $115 to the price of a $100,000 mortgage over 30 years. Well, if the average or the median price is around 400,000, it means that people have to come up with an additional $460 before they even begin to think about the higher property taxes that come with higher priced homes. So this is basically meaning that your average punter has to come up with at least an extra $500 a month to pay for the same house that they could have bought cheaper just 6 months ago. And that's going to cut into spending. And obviously, it's going to weigh on the consumer. And of course, that will contribute to less demand. And the thing that the Federal Reserve has been talking most about was that demand surged. Of course, demand surged because they made so much money available. And now they're going to contract the availability of money and try and hit demand. And this, I think, is particularly relevant for commodities. So oil prices are back down to $100. They're being aided in declining by by governments all over the world releasing supply from strategic reserves. So that's helping to moderate the price appreciation. $100 is an awfully big psychological level for oil. And if it can continue to hold this level, we're still in a benign medium-term environment. But it's also, I think, relevant that when we just chart the backwardation, this is the gap between the front month and the second month, then it is trending down. So this suggests that the medium-term move that we've had in oil prices is starting to come to an end, and that the tightness at the front end of the curve is abating. So that will reduce urgency for buying oil contracts, and it does suggest that prices are going to start coming back down, and that will help to moderate some of the inflationary pressures. And then we can think about copper. There's a really solid secular bull market argument for copper. We have battery factories getting built all over the world. Most of them are still in construction. So they're not representing big sources of demand in the short term, but they will represent significant sources of demand over the medium term. In the short term, you have tightening monetary conditions, so that will impact demand. What it suggests is we should, I think, anticipate that copper prices will moderate in the short term and rally again over the medium term. And that is going to contribute to perhaps a buying opportunity over the next 6 to 8 weeks, and then subsequently a powerful rebound. And it's going to be very much dependent on the willingness of central banks to relent from talking about raising rates when growth does start to moderate. And we did have the failed upside break up out of this range about 2 months ago. We're back in the region of the upper side of the range. So some consolidation here, I think, wouldn't be all that surprising. What's particularly interesting is that the dollar has been rallying and commodities have generally been very firm. So that is not typical, and it's in just representative of the odd type of environment that we have right now because of the war and the pandemic and supply disruptions and a lot of unsettled activity in terms of global supply chains. Gold continues to hold here around the $1,900 area. It was in positive territory earlier on today, gave up most of it, and still holding this area. We're in an environment where the dollar is strengthening, other currencies are weakening. Ultimately, it's going to come down to the question of debt sustainability. And with higher yields, then central banks don't have a lot of choice. They have to do something to help to support those prices. So reducing the number of bonds they're willing to buy puts downward pressure on yields or on prices initially. The hit to growth will then create demand for debt and will help to bring those yields back down. So the acceleration that we've seen in bond yields and the challenge that that has represented for gold prices isn't going to last indefinitely. And when yields start to come back down, against a background where inflation isn't going to disappear, then it's likely to act as a tailwind for gold. And this again is an example of what we have with copper. There are medium-term bull market phenomena, but there are short-term challenges. And gold prices have held up better, and have been really ranging for more than a year already. Considering that 18-month consolidations are not unusual for gold, and the fact that we were very briefly pushed on to new highs, I think that this still is just a period of consolidation prior to prices pushing higher from here. The Federal Reserve is going to be the most aggressive in trying to combat inflationary pressures, but the negative consequences for Wall Street will feed through into other markets. Ultimately, as the growth portion of the market experiences the most pressure, then it's quite likely that Europe and Japan will have better performance because they simply don't have the same technology waiting. But the Euro stocks is pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average, and then we'll need to demonstrate a higher reaction low if we're to continue to give the benefit of the doubt to support building. When we think about the FTSE 250, it got almost up to the region of the 200-day moving average and is also pausing in here. One thing that I was looking at today, because I've been waiting for the Wuxia Federal Reserve measure to be updated. And it hasn't updated since the end of February. And I suspect that it's going to be quite a bit higher by the time it does. But they also do a shadow banking rate for the UK. And what I find especially interesting is that it was at a negative 900 basis points at the beginning of 2021, and now we are up at about 120 basis points to the positive. So the UK has had 1,000 basis points of tightening in the shadow banking, or in the shadow rate. So the job of tightening up on financial conditions is well underway in the UK, and UK assets are trading at a substantial valuation discount. So it's quite likely that the UK is going to begin to ease again, and that should help to support the stock market when inflationary pressures start to abate. And I would anticipate that with the kind of tightening that's been underway, that we should anticipate that inflationary pressures will have already, could perhaps have already peaked, and will already be trending down within the next quarter to 2 quarters, which would suggest that we're going to get a higher reaction low or a medium-term low in the market at some point in the next quarter, and that will be amid a short-term oversold condition because there's a lot of angst that hasn't yet been expressed, which is probably inevitable. Then Bitcoin prices were down $2,000 today, and Bitcoin is a major barometer of liquidity and risk appetite. So it's pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average, and it really does need to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows if support building is to continue to be given the benefit of the doubt. And it has room in which to consolidate, but it does look like it's going to consolidate. And as a major liquidity barometer, then I think it's unlikely that we're going to see a significant low in the stock market before Bitcoin confirms its low. Some of the best performing speculative shares have also started to ease back. So Tesla continues to hold its sequence of lower rally highs, which began in November. When we think about the fact that the semiconductor sector has been announcing new spending programs left and right, but the shares are not rising. Microchip technology, it looked like it had top formation characteristics towards the end of 2021, and then it popped on the upside and then failed to hold the breakout and is now coming back down again. So it's looking increasingly likely that this is an emerging Type 3 top formation. When we think about Taiwan Semiconductor, then it also has top formation completion characteristics, having accelerated, ranging, failed upside break, massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So we have Type 1 and Type 2 top formation completion characteristics right now. Then ASML, which, and I've been in meetings and I've been at conferences where people talk about it as a share that never goes down, but this is loss of consistency at the penultimate high, massive reaction against the prevailing trend, failed upside break, another massive reaction against the prevailing trend, resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, where it has always offered support in the past. So this is increasingly looking like a completed top formation. When we then think about the sectors that had pulled back most, well, the ARK Innovation ETF, it rallied to break its sequence of lower rally highs. And this week it's starting to pull back once more. So we're certainly looking at a more risky environment here. And I think that it is more likely than not, given the scale of the pullback and the threat from rising interest rates, that we're more likely than not to see Type 3 bottom formation characteristics emerging for the speculative portion of the market. So we're certainly in a more corrective phase overall. When we then think about what's going on in Asia, well, China's continuing failure to keep the rise of the Omicron variant under wraps in China is going to contribute to perhaps eventually, although perhaps not quite yet, greater monetary accommodation. They're terrified of creating a housing bubble. And obviously, they've been weighing on the property sector. But bottling up millions of people is obviously not great for the economy. And it's certainly not good for social unrest when people are going hungry because they're not allowed to leave their homes. And despite the fact that they've gone into full lockdown in Jilin, they haven't been able to get the coronavirus under control. So these are, I think, significant challenges. And the Hang Seng Index had unwound at least part of the oversold condition and is starting to come back down. The H Share Index has also unwound part of its oversold condition and is now susceptible to additional downside. When we then think about Australia, the COVID lockdowns and the rising, or I guess the better position that consumers are in, has helped the stock market get all the way back up to the high. The potential for monetary tightening, there's the RBA is expected to raise rates aggressively, and obviously this is a more of a problematic issue for somewhere like Australia than it is for the USA because of the floating rate mortgages. That's likely to put a limit on just how many interest rate hikes the RBA can go through with. We're in the region of the peak, so it does look likely that we're going to get at least some consolidation. And then when we look at the Australian dollar, it's pushed back up to break the sequence of lower rally highs, and now it does look likely that we're going to see some consolidation because it's unlikely the RBA is going to be able to raise rates as, or I guess, remove accommodation as quickly as the Federal Reserve can, because of those floating rate mortgages. And obviously, prices and consumer leverage in places like Australia and Canada are going to be problematic in a less liquid environment. So the S&P or the TSX index is working on a downside weekly key reversal. And the energy sector has been particularly benign for Canada over the course of the last few months. It's certainly helped to obviate the downward pressure that's been coming through from one of Canada's largest companies, Shopify. So Shopify had been the largest company on the index, collapsed, and the stock market was able to continue higher because of the energy component. Now oil prices are starting to come back down, so that's going to lend additional headwinds to the Canadian market. So we're certainly in a more corrective phase overall. And I think we're in for deeper pullbacks until central banks relent. And we're just not at that point yet. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.